to the Better Golf Podcast, powered by Wynn Daily Sports, where bettors go to bet better. Here are your hosts, Tee Off Sports and Sticks Picks.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Better Golf Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Aguiar. I am joined by my co-host, Nick Bretwish, and I am excited to tackle this week's Charles Schwab Challenge, a course that has historically been kind to me over the years, ranking as my seventh winningest event I have tracked over the past 3 years. A lot of that has stemmed from in-tournament ads in the outright sector, so be sure to follow anything that I may find value on there throughout the week. But how is everything going for you this week, man?
Good. I mean, PGA Championship was fantastic to watch. Not the best from the betting perspective for me, as minus 1.05 units. But coming off of four straight profitable tournaments in a row, I was probably due for a stinker. The only thing I'm upset about with myself, and maybe this is a lesson to everybody, is biases in betting. Just don't mix. Like with Brooks Koepka, dude, I took him out of the player pool without even looking at him. Obviously, I know who he is. Like I can understand, you know, he's a killer in majors, great New York, like all this history that's there. But after the tournament, and this, you know, this isn't groundbreaking news or anything like that, but I literally just took him out of my player pool. The ownership wasn't high.
No.
The outright price that I had on him, I think, was 30, like damn near flat, maybe in between 30 and 31 to 1 on my numbers. I think the market started right around there, so I didn't really have an edge in the outright market anyway, and I think it went down to like 25-ish right before lock, depending on what book you had. So I'm not mad I didn't take the outright, but man, like, everything that I was looking for is, you know, longer hitters of the golf ball, accurate drivers. If you look at Brooks when he's healthy, obviously the Masters was him healthy. That was the first time we've seen him healthy unless you watch LIV. And I don't really know how to weight anything on LIV. But if you look at his LIV stats, he's pounding the ball and he's been hitting fairways all month long, all April long, all spring long, right after Augusta. And before Augusta, too, he was doing the same. At Orlando when he won, he pounded it. He was hitting fairways. At the Masters, he pounded it. He was hitting fairways. His iron play was fantastic. His long iron play was fantastic. And his putting is always very good, especially when he's healthy. Going back 3 years ago when Brooks was quote-unquote healthy, his long irons were fantastic. He pounds the ball, he hits fairways, and he putts very well. So everything that we were looking for at Oak Hill, and I was just like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about LIV. I think Brooks, you know, blew his load at the Augusta, and Sunday we saw, you know, how that kind of unfolds. And I was just out. So I'm super pissed at myself for that just because, again, it was me like looking at LIV. It's like, you know, I don't know. Not a thing. Didn't even look at his numbers. I couldn't tell you how many players I actually like dove into incredibly long. Like, shit, Thorbjørn Olesen. I was looking at him for days to figure out if I liked him or not. I did. Didn't play that well. It is what it is. You know, so many people didn't play well. So I don't really feel bad about that. It's not like I had 40% Thorbs. It was just, you know, a 0% owned guy that I was going overweight on, but just very mad at myself that I didn't look at least look at Brooks Koepka. I just took him out of the field. I knew I was going to play Scotty. I knew I was going to play some Rahm, and I knew I was going to play Rory. I pretty much chose Rory over Brooks, which it is what it is. I'll own that. But yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but it just kind of pisses me off that like every single box I was looking for, if I actually spent 15 minutes looking at what Brooks was doing leading up to this, and what he did when he was healthy, because I don't want to take the sample size when he wasn't healthy at all. We know he was just not good. So frustrating, but it is what it is. So hopefully maybe someone out there can resonate with that or relate to that. Or hopefully you didn't do the same and you're just like, okay, this is gambling. This is DFS, whatever you're listening to this show for. You just cannot have your blinders on due to biases and things like that. Like, obviously, if you love Russell Henley, I love Russell Henley, and you just want to play him and he's in your player pool like Will Gordon, like, I'll always keep those guys in my players pool just because I want to root for them. To me, in DFS, that is part of the fun. And if they happen to pan out and they're low owned, especially, that's great. Like, I faded Russell Henley last week simply because of ownership. You know, I was going to play the shit out of him if he was 5%. When I saw 12 to 15% towards the lock, I was like, absolutely not. He's, you know, well, taking time bomb always. And it's a long course. Like, it didn't fit him perfectly. So, you know, I do that when there's ownership involved, but when it's just like middle of the pack ownership, like Brooks was, it's like he's not super leveraged, he's not 5%, he's, you know, right around 10 to 12 at price pretty high. I just completely took him out of the player pool without even looking at it. Big fuck up on my part, pardon my language, but it is what it is. So I'll kick it over to you after my classic rant to start the show, like usual. Any thoughts on that? And then let's get into Colonial, break down the DFS pool a little bit and get out of here. We will do a quick show this week, and I'm sure everybody kind of is exhausted after all the golf last week and how awesome Sunday was. And shout out, you know, to Block. That was fantastic. Such a cool story. Hits the ace. That means everything because he makes it on the number. That up and down on 18 too, I think was, you know, an ace is an ace. It's damn near impressive. He dunked it. It's awesome. But how he got up and down on 18 was fantastic.
Have you seen what my best bet is on the Action Network show that we're
Yes, I have. And I'm 100% for it too. So I guess we could start there. What is his price? 67-ish, I would have guessed. 69. Wow. 5% owned is what I'm seeing. Like, yeah, he's awesome. I would love to root for him. If he's in, you know, the mix on Sunday, I think that'd be badass. But I don't know. I feel like with the weather looking like it's going to be very clean and not too much wind in Texas, I think this is going to get to like 15, 18 under. I don't see Michael Block making that many birdies. Like, sure, he scrambled for par, played his ass off, made an ace, but did not make a lot of birdies. I don't think this is a course that's, you know, obviously you don't got to be long. He was hitting driver, his ball speed sometimes like 155 to 160. I was like, dude, I hit it harder than that sometimes. So it gave me some hope, but I do not shape iron. Like, he was shaping every club in the world. You could just tell he is a pro and just a great ball striker. But no, I do not think this is the tournament. You just want to go run back to him because there's going to be a lot of birdies and the field's pretty damn good.
Part of the problem is too, is like there's expectations around him now and he has media, like he's going to have to talk to people. He's not going to get the practice in. Like, everybody knows who he is now. I just think, like, we've seen this historically from players when they've won an event and when they go on that media tour the next year, sometimes they have a letdown. I kind of think that's what's going to happen with Michael Block, even beyond any of the statistical reasons for why I think he's going to miss the cut. So that number opened on DraftKings at minus 210. I recommended it in my Rotoballer article. I think that price is gone now. I do want to say you can still find it in the 250s, 260s if you really shop around that places. But I don't know. Like, for me, it's one of those situations where if he didn't do this last week, and I don't want to use him for example. Like, obviously, if he didn't do it last week, he wouldn't even be in this event. But like a player of his stature, if he didn't, a player like that didn't do this last week, you would never have this opportunity to bet that golfer to miss the cut. So for me, there's value to be had to where they are. I give them credit that they've made it a two-way market. I kind of thought this would be a one-way market that was going to be so poorly juiced on him to make the cut that it was going to be unbettable in any single way to do this. But I give all the books credit that they've at least put a price out to miss the cut. So that's my favorite bet of the week. And then just to touch on Brooks really fast before we do move on into this tournament, I think you bring up a lot of good points there because one of the things you and I always say on this show is we are trying to find golfers, even if they're overpriced, if it means that the ownership goes down and we can create leverage in that way, that's kind of the exact answer that we're trying to pinpoint in that situation. And maybe I was too, I guess, bearish would be the right word with Brooks here to where we know that he's been playing on LIV. We know the stats when you run them are not going to look the way that you would want them to. And like, he was fine from a safety perspective in my model. I want to say he was inside the top 15 or 17, which I mean, when he's the fourth or fifth price player on the board, obviously there's a problem there. And I think from an outright betting market, I was never going to find value. And you and I have talked about this a million times to where I almost believe right now that the outright market is not a winnable market. And the reason for that is you take the top 10 or 12 guys that are probably the perceived favorites to win. The sports books are skewing and masking it in their favor. You're not getting that drift in the middle tier. And then realistically, you're also not getting any, like, a long shot has not won a tournament this year. Like, I guess you could say Kitayama won at the price that he was, but I mean, we're still talking about like a borderline top 50 golfer at the time of him winning an event. So it's been really difficult boards. You don't have to look any further than Koepka, Corey Connors when he won at Valero, Jason Day when he won 2 weeks ago. These are markets that are really difficult to try to get a wager in on from an outright perspective. Like, these are guys that are coming in either in the teens or in the low 20s. And I am a little bit afraid moving forward if there is any value to talk about in the outright sector. It doesn't mean we can't find value in other areas. And maybe the key answer is what you just said, Nick, to where this should have been a DFS play that both of us considered. And unfortunately, I removed him from my player pool. I didn't use him in any capacity. I didn't full fade him across the market like I did with Dustin Johnson. Like, I was auto clicking every single night trying to find matchups against him. And it didn't work out against Sungjae. Obviously, that was an unmitigated disaster. But I did.
Justin sucked on the weekend. So like as much, it's like right Sungjae play. Just, yeah, absolutely. I would stand by that. I know you took some shit for that, but Dustin was awful at Oak Hill. It just happened to be that Sungjae was twice as awful.
Yeah, I mean,
it is what it is.
I'm not going to win it. Like Dustin did kind of exactly what my model anticipated him to do. Like he graded inside the top 45 ish, but barely. I think he came in 50 something at the place. So that's kind of what the expectation was. And clearly it looked really bad on Thursday when Sungjae just goes to the bottom of the leaderboard and Dustin's sitting at the top and you can't have it any worse. But really, anytime I give a head-to-head matchup, and I've said this numerous times, it's always a fade against the opponent that I'm trying to take on rather than the golfer I'm trying to back. In this particular situation, you know, it didn't work out this way, but I thought Sungjae was safe. We can say the travel and all of that, and it caught up to him. And maybe that was the problem. And, you know, I'll just say it's a bad play and move on with it. But I was able to hit Xander against him at minus 120 in the second round. And then in the third round, I had Cameron Davis at plus 160 over him. So it was a profitable week for me fading Dustin Johnson. Like the one that makes the headlines is the Sungjae play, just because that was on the Action website as the play of the week for it. But like, I won 1.6 units when Cameron Davis beat him. I lost 1.2 when Sungjae lost. So, I mean, it's kind of give and take there. And then really the one that killed me, and then we will get into this board right now, Steven Yeager on Sunday, that accounted for about a 5-unit swing for me. I had him against Justin Suh in a head-to-head matchup. So that one obviously lost, so take 1.2 units down there. I had him in a pretty substantial, like to win about 1.5 units as a top 40. I thought that was locked in. That didn't end up happening. Lost the top 20 play, lost the top 5 play, and ended up becoming this, you know, 5-unit plus swing for me that unfortunately when that happens, it's going to be a big hit. But for everything that happened last week and all the ups and downs that did come into play, you know, I won over a unit. It was kind of one of those things where a Varner, Rose, Cam Davis top 40 run really saved me. And then hitting Cam Davis over Dustin at plus 160 when you can get 1.6 units on something like that, that obviously adds up and checks all the boxes there. But I think we've always said this, Nick, and it kind of shows there, you don't need to be spot on in every single market and you don't need to be spot on every single wager that you make. Really, if you can just have one market that you excel in the week, you can probably try to find a way to be profitable with it. And then if you get really hot, that's where you can make the runs here. And you've been hot for a couple weeks. Obviously, it regressed a little bit back to the means with it. Like it's not going to be a winning week every single week, but still think both of us are up on the season. We are still trending in the right direction. It's not as big of a winning year as I've usually had at this point because I'm lacking outright wins, which I talked about a second ago why I think that is. But I'm never going to find myself overly exposed to these outright cards. And for that reason, I'm not going to have a ton of outrights. Like we'll talk about some outrights at the end of the show, but it's not going to be a tournament. Like to me, whether you want to say Scheffler or Finau or Hovland or Homa or whatever name you want to throw at the top, I think that's the most likely winner of this tournament. And unfortunately the prices in my, at least by my math, is not going to be conducive to place a wager on them. So it's either like, I don't want to make a bet or I've gone into that next tier of the Russell Henleys and golfers like that, that I'm trying to find value on. But you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to pick and choose your spots here.
Yeah, absolutely. And quick question. What would you make the odds that Michael Block is on a featured group this week on PGA Tour Live?
Minus a million at this point.
Yeah, they gotta do it. I mean, if they want viewers, it's gimmicky as shit, but it is what it is. Let's get into the board.
Perfect.
10K and above. Let's do it different this week. Who are your two favorite?
So from a leverage standpoint, and
let's just say also this answer is for like, you know, 500 person field single entry GPP. So obviously there's okay. Cash game answers. There's not, if you're making one lineup, mid-tier field GPP, who are you going with for two guys here?
If I'm making one lineup, I'm going to change my answer. Then I was going to say Homa if we were playing in something bigger from leverage. If I'm making one lineup, I mean, Hovland or Scheffler, I mean, that's a spot I can figure out with that. But from an upside perspective, Hovland was the number one player in my model. And I want to preface that before I move past that saying that I think Hovland is the top upside player. Scottie Scheffler got absolutely burned with how much putting I put into my model. From an overall perspective, Scottie Scheffler is the number one golfer. But there is a concern with the putter with him. Like, obviously, if he gets hot with the flat stick, he can run away with this tournament. But I think if I was to rank this group, like, my least favorite play, it's tough, Nick. Like, every single player we're talking about is inside the top six of either the overall or upside iteration of my model. But I would say my least favorite is probably Morikawa. That's an every week answer. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. And then, I don't know. I think if I'm trying to get unique in some different contest, I do kind of like Homa this week. And I know markets do not, but this feels like the type of venue where Homa can once again find success.
Yeah, I think I would second that answer. Homa does grade. I mean, I'm just looking at the Bankrest Green scoring here. Homa struggles in comparison to the field or in comparison to guys at that price range. Same with Morikawa. Finau lights it up, and his course history here is really good too. Do you like Finau? I feel like my answer was going to be, you know, the cop-out answer of Scotty and Finau up top. But I do like Homa in terms of the ownership. Hovland, I mean, when he's hot, he's hot. So, I mean, all three of those guys grade amazing. And so that I think pricing is spot on this week. They did a really good job with the pricing.
Yeah, overall, Scheffler's one, Hovland's two, Finau's three. So, yeah. Like, we're really nitpicking in this spot. I do like Finau. I like Finau every single week. I'm going to probably give an answer of I will be much lower on him just because I am a little bit more aggressive with Hovland than I typically would be. But, yeah, I mean, there's really not much to say about Finau where the profile is bad. You said the course history is great. Four top 25s here in the last four times he's played it. I think statistically this checks a lot of the boxes that I keep talking about where if you can make it more of an accuracy course, I think Finau's upside actually increases at this point. And any single time that you can look at these, like from a GIR percentage here, like the one thing, and we didn't talk about a course breakdown, and I think this is at least something worth noting very quickly. My model, and I'd be curious to hear what yours thought, it essentially thinks this is a pitch and putt contest. And I think it kind of shows in a lot of iterations of how you run the data with it. But kind of like the number one answer for me is, can you hit a green in regulation? That was the most important answer that there could be with this. The second answer that came into play is, how did you putt between 10 to 25 plus feet? Because there is a reduction that's being had of putts or shots that are being hit within 5 feet here, which is a really weird answer for a course that is kind of a approach plus putting venue, because you're not necessarily sticking it close, but the guys that can hit it on these smaller than average greens and then have a better likelihood to make the putt, those were the ones that graded really well for me. And I guess that's the answer that I would give with Hovland here for why I like them so much. So when I looked at his weighted proximity, he's third overall in this field. That's something that you would expect. The weighted putting for him was 63rd. I think that's perfectly fine for like this course for where he can find success here. And kind of when you took those two categories together, Homa would be the number one player looking at weighted approach plus putting in this range. Number two was Hovland. And then you kind of had Morikawa, Finau, and Scheffler all in the same sector close. And part of that, it's because, I mean, Scheffler was 111th for me in weighted putting, which brought him down there. He was number one in four of the six categories that I ran, but that was the one that hurt Scheffler a little bit.
All right, right on. 9K range. What do you got?
I might be a glutton for punishment here, but I kind of like going back to Sungjae here.
Dude, he's my favorite play on the board, I think, also. So you're weighting putting from 10 to 20 feet very heavily?
I'm waiting putting from 10 to 25 plus feet, which is a category that Sungjae doesn't necessarily pop for me, I guess. But there's a lot of other areas where he does. Like, I think the bogey avoidance, the weighted scoring is a really big one. Sungjae's always going to look good from a weighted tee to green perspective. Short courses, he seems to perform well. But I think it's a nice spot to go back to him. Like, you kind of get this ownership area here with Sungjae, Justin Rose, Fleetwood. I mean, those are three more golfers for me that are inside the top seven of my model. Talking about really good players, but I like Fleetwood. Like, my model seems to really like him. I'm trying to find a reason not to remove him from my pool. I think Rose is my least favorite of those three. So, like, naturally, that makes me want to be lower on him. I am going to likely be out on Sam Burns. I see a lot of ownership around Chris Kirk. I would rather play Siwoo Kim in his volatility. I don't know what your thoughts are about Siwoo. The course history is absolutely pathetic. But I also think from an upside perspective, he can pop at less than 10%. So from a leverage answer, I like Siwoo. I probably am going to play Fleetwood. I like Sungjae. I could do without most of the other names in this range. Like Spieth grades well for me. I don't know where his wrist is right now. I'd like to get more answers there.
Yeah. I mean, his ball striking was pretty damn good last week, but yeah, I'll probably pass on Spieth at the moment, but my two favorites are Sungjae and Fleetwood. Fleetwood checks every single box for me. Yeah. The GIR percentage from the proximities that we're really looking at is pretty much anywhere from 100 to 175, if not a little less, depending on what they do off the tee. I like Siwoo as well. 10% Siwoo, I think I'll probably fall into that trap like I always do, but let's go into the 8K range. Who are your two favorites? I'm likely fading Cameron Davis. If it's 23% ownership, I'm just going to be out. But my favorites would be, I kind of like Denny McCarthy, and ownership's pretty low.
Markets like Denny McCarthy from what I've seen. I never can get there, but I can understand that answer.
Yeah, I like Denny and NKH Lee. And then obviously I like Russell Henley, but I just assume his ownership's going to continue to rise. Right now I see 12%. I just can't imagine a world where it's under 15%.
It's unfortunate. When Monday, when I ran this for my Roto Baller article, the answer I gave, because I saw Ricky at like 17, 18%, and I saw Russell Henley in the single digits. And the answer I gave in that article is I legitimately think Henley and Ricky are about the same caliber of play in this tournament. And then that's before we even look at ownership. And now all of a sudden you throw ownership into the mix. And I really like Russell Henley. I see 13.5% now. So that number just continues to rise. I still think it's fine at 13.5%. I really like him this week. Like, he's one of my favorite players on the board. The one negative that I will throw into this mix, like obviously the accuracy off the tee, he's number one. There's a lot of positives there. He is dead last in this tournament when I ran weighted putting from that distance. And maybe you can give the answer if the scoring is lower, that's okay. If this starts creeping into that 15, 18 under number, like you said, all of a sudden that's not as conducive to success with it. So it's not like the profile is exactly perfect with him, but I do like Russell Henley right now. I probably am going to give the same answer as you, where I am not going to play Cam Davis if we're approaching 16, 17, 18% plus. I really like KH Lee for a lot of the same answers for why I talked about with Siwoo Kim. You're not going to have the course history that you want, but those two golfers in particular, I guess Tom Hoagie would be the third. I haven't made a decision yet on what I want to do with Hoagie because I don't think the form has necessarily been what those other twos have been recently, but KH Lee takes a massive jump just like Siwoo Kim does. And then the other two that I want to just mention, you can move on past the section once I say this name. I do like Brian Harman this week. I think Brian Harman's a really good course fit. The ownership is very fine for me. I see 7.5%. You know, it's funny, Nick, how this answer is given because everybody is so course history heavy and they want to play people because of the course history until it doesn't fit the narrative of like a guy like Brian Harman where like the form doesn't look right. And it's like, well, now all of a sudden the course history doesn't matter. Like if you're going to tell me he's less than 8% and we're talking about a golfer that I know he missed the cut last year, but 8th, 23rd, 31st, 14th, in four of the past 5 years. I do like him. The one that I'm worried about a little bit that I do see going down in ownership, but technically if he's going to be sub 10%, I guess I will jump back in as Steven Yeager. I wasn't planning on giving that answer when I saw 15%. I was removing him from my player pool, but if everybody wants to panic over that Sunday finish from him, I guess I am in, but that's really an ownership dependent answer at the end of the day. Because if that starts approaching anything back to where it was, I'll just make Yeager beat me.
For sure. All right. 7K range. Give me three favorites.
All right. Let me scroll through this very fast.
I'll go first then.
Okay.
I don't mind Billy Horschel. That's like larger field GPP for sure. Everything grades out pretty well for him from a longer sample size. Obviously current form is not good, so that's probably why I would not go there in single entry. I like Matthew Neesmith a ton. His form's fantastic. Ownership's not high. Great putting, great approach play. I believe he is also fantastic on the grass too. Do you have that rating right now in front of you?
I can get it to you right now. The other thing I'll add as I'm looking that up is he's historically very good on these shorter courses also. So that is a positive.
Yeah, I like everything about him. Yeah, his long irons are, I guess, the sketchy part of his game. Shouldn't have to use a ton of those. Andrew Putnam grades very well for me. And Aaron Rye. I like the come on Aaron Rye here. If no one's going to play him, everybody used to play him. 2% ownership, I'm seeing Aaron Rye. So I kind of like these guys in the lower part that gives me room to, if I want to play Scotty, if I want to play Finau and I want to pair or play Hovland, something like that, and pair him with Sungjae because I'm probably going to play a ton of Sungjae. It gives me a lot of room in the 7K range. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the chalk build this week. I don't really have a feeling on what that's going to be yet. So my post on Wednesday with player pools and all that will probably kind of tell you where I think the chalk lines are going. But yeah, I like Aaron Rye a ton. So I like these guys. I obviously love Will Gordon. He's fantastic on Bankgrass. It's a small sample size, but everything he does on Bankgrass is damn good. I think he's third in the field in average birdies per round. Don't ask me average bogeys per round because I'm sure he's top of the field in that too. That's just what you're going to get with him. But Vincent Norman too. I like a lot of these guys in the lower 7K range that are all less than 5%. I think you can get a lot of good players here that don't have ownership. And I think Aaron Rye and Neesmith, that combo, I like that a ton.
So I have a top 40 on Matthew Neesmith. I have two top 40s this week on my entire card, but Matthew Neesmith top 40 plus 160. That is on FanDuel. Yep. The other one that I bet was Mark Hubbard top 40 at plus 185 on FanDuel. I continue to try to play Mark Hubbard every single week, it seems like there, but I agree with you. I think there's a lot of players in this lower $7,000 section that graded as a value for me. So like just very quickly to rattle off some of those names, Aaron Rye, Vincent Norman, Will Gordon, Matthew Neesmith. Those are names that you just talked about. My model really liked Andrew Putnam. It liked Joseph Bramlett. I don't know if I necessarily feel as safe about going to him, but it was a play that at least my model liked. Nick Taylor graded well for me. Eric Cole always seems to grade well for me. I don't love the ownership there. We'll see if I end up playing that. As of right now, I probably would lean no because of that ownership. Hayden Buckley, I think Hayden Buckley graded pretty well for me. He was inside the top 25. I don't necessarily think of Hayden Buckley on a course like this, but I guess maybe this is exactly the type of venue I should if he's inside the top 25 for me in the way I ran it. And then I guess if I just was to throw out a couple just to ask your opinion on, do you have thoughts on Thomas Dietrich at this price?
I just don't think I'm a Dietrich guy.
I don't think you are either.
That's a biasy part, but no, he grades okay for me. Let me see exactly where he is.
He doesn't grade great for me. I do think from an ownership perspective, there's a way to create leverage with him at the price more than anything.
Yeah, he's 54th for me, so nothing crazy at all. That's pretty much right where he's priced, though. So it 37th is what it is.
For me. So, I mean, even technically at 37th, there's kind of some problems with pricing there. But I don't know. I see less than 2.5%. I'm kind of willing to bet on what I thought was general safety with him, maybe not so much recently. And then my model always seems to like Alex Smalley. That's not really a shock, but that's probably it for me. I mean, there are like, it likes Griot and Bezaden and how there's going to be ownership answers that need to be had there of how we want to.
I like Bez. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off there.
Yeah. I think if I was to pick between the two, it would probably be Bezaden and how in that spot. But I mean, I guess before we move to the bottom section, I'll ask you about one more player just because I see a lot of people on him this week. Do you have thoughts on Brendan Todd?
I'm not a Brendan Todd guy. The ownership's pretty high. The market likes him. The price isn't fantastic. It's all course history for him, isn't it? Yeah. T8 and T3rd and solo third last year.
The one answer I'll give to that, I guess, as a contrarian part to that, he does grade 24th for me when I ran this just from a statistical perspective. So you do get some of the course history. You also get a relatively okay. I mean, I don't know if we want to say like, I mean, if you're borderline top 25 as a $7,800 golfer, that is like some great value, but just throwing it out there. We'll see where the ownership goes though.
Yeah, I don't like the strokes gained approach numbers recently either. It's just such a mixed bag for a ball striker's paradise. And he's going to be popular and quite high in price. Playing him solely off course history just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I think that that's a fair answer. And that's kind of the opposite of the Brian Harman answer there, where I know Todd's in better form than Harman is. But if you want to give, if people want to give Todd a lot of respect for, like, there's not a big difference in my model. Like, my model likes Brian Harman a little bit more as it is to begin with. So, I mean, if you're kind of looking at the same player around the same price tag, I would rather play Brian Harman if comparing.
I think the hammer kid last week was, or this time last year was Brian Harman, and he missed a cut. And I think that's exactly when I swore never again. 6K range. I like Scott Stallings.
I don't know. I mean, maybe this is where my bias comes into play. I've never gotten him right one time in the entire history of playing him. I will say, I don't know that I necessarily have anybody that I love in the $6,000 range, which is what makes this tough. Like, the players that I am more bullish on would be where the market is also more bullish also. Like the Ben Martins and guys like that, where my model does think Ben Martin is a realistic top 30 play in this tournament. I don't hate the ownership. Like, I don't know what you see on him. I think he's kind of like kind of in the fringe range of where is still playable with him.
Yeah, I see 5 for Ben Griffin.
Yeah, like I see 6.5. So,
or Ben Martin, sorry, Ben Martin, same thing, both at 5 for me.
Yeah, I kind of would be fine there. But like, for me, my favorite play would probably be Hubbard, I guess. I mean, you kind of have good course history here, at least of making cuts. You have multiple made cuts in a row on tour. I think Lee Hodges is somebody who grades just fine for me if you're looking at a mid $6,000 golfer. And then I don't know.
Noren at 1%.
I could be talked into Noren. Like, my model's not, doesn't like it, but I just think the pedigree of Noren, like, it's astonishing that Alex Noren is cheaper than Michael Block. Like, I don't know in what world that could have been possible.
And no ownership. That's where it's like, I'm kind of interested. There's something in me that kind of trusts him, but I don't know.
The thing is, yeah, is like, if he pops, he can really pop here. So even if the numbers are not grading out the way that I would want in my model, I think at 1% ownership, I am going to leave him in. I'm going to hope for the best here, because it's kind of like we talked about in this, like Scott Stallings, you can give a very similar answer for like that. At least you've seen, like, he's a player who can win on tour and has shown that he can win in the past. So I don't know. I'd rather bet on that profile than throwing a random dart on whoever you want to talk about in this section that's down in this range, like that I haven't seen anything from. Because it gets gross really fast. Like, I think once you get to, I mean, is there anybody for you 6,500 or less that you would consider playing? I have a couple players that grade well for me. Doesn't
Carson Young? I mean, Carson Young, yeah, always seems to get up there and finishes, but I try to get away from that. Marty Dell? Marty Dell's playing a little golf. What about Robbie Shelton?
That was one of the names teams I was going to say. I think Robbie Shelton is the ultimate case or boom or bust right now. He has positive trajectory for upside. He sinks to the floor when you run this from safety, just from what we've seen from him kind of recently with some of these numbers. But I think if you're trying to shoot for a player down here that can pop a little bit, kind of like Shelton, I kind of like Andrew Novak for that same answer for what I just gave with Shelton there. Technically, Grayson Sig has that same answer for me. But these are like golfers where I think it's very likely that all those names I just said could theoretically miss the cut too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's all I got though. I'm kind of excited to play. I mean, it's a very good field, so I think that's pretty cool.
Any bets that you want to give before we get out of here? Any of
your
favorite plays?
I'll give my outrights. I mean, Cam Davis opened at 70-1 on points bet. I was sleeping, got it at 60-1. Now it's like 35-1. I don't even think I like Cameron Davis, but if he's going to be that popular in DFS, he grades fine for me. Well, definitely a value at 60-1. So I took that. I took Fleetwood at 34-1. Billy Ho at 250-1. That's burning money, but I did play the juice pretty much, if you want to call it that. I took Finau at 14, Bazadenhout at 80, and Sungjae at 20.
I might have the grossest outright card ever constructed in the history of life, because I tend to agree with you that the winner is probably going to be Fleetwood or Sungjae or Finau or one of those names. I just didn't want to have a very big exposure card when I couldn't figure out which one it was. And I figured maybe I can just bet this from an in-tournament perspective. That's how I got Sam Burns last year. Maybe, yep, I can find a very similar answer with that. But this might be, I mean, you're going to love the Russell Henley play. I got him at 45-1. Always. And then, Nick, this is just so gross in every single name I'm about to say. Siwoo Kim, 45-1. Brian Harman, 70-1. K.H. Lee, 90-1. Mark Hubbard, 250-1. A lot of those numbers you can find at different spots here. Some are better, some are worse. Like, I think Hubbard can be found in the 300s now. I got the best of the K.H. Lee number. The Siwoo price, unfortunately, that drifted to 55-1 on Monday night. And I thought it was going to continue drifting because of the course history that he had. And I woke up on Tuesday hoping that maybe he was 60, 65 and I was going to pull the trigger. And then I woke up and all of a sudden he was like 45 at that point at a couple books and 40 at the majority of them. And I was like, all right, I guess, you know, it's a 0.03 unit mistake for me to get this off at this point. I still think Siwoo has upside, so I'll take it at this price that we see. But I don't know. I don't feel very confident that I'm going to hit an outright here. I think it's going to be one of the names that you either have on your card or a Hovland or a Scheffler. And that's the problem I keep running into in this outright sector is I'm naming names that are maybe too far down the board when the most likely winner are the Sungjae's, Homas, Finaus, Fleetwoods, Schefflers, Hovlands.
Yeah, that 40-1 range. Pretty much anybody that's priced with 2% win equity or higher.
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm taking shots there. And then I guess we will get out of here. One play very quickly before we do, because I didn't mention it. Want to get your thoughts on it. I think this is asking for a miscut versus miscut battle. Like, I'm pretty sure that that's a bigger scenario likelihood than I would hope for. Ben Griffin, minus 120 over Adam Schenck. Do you have thoughts there?
I would take the Griffin side.
Yeah, I took it because Schenck was outside the top 100 in my model. I'll give a more in-depth answer for that on our Action Network show that we are going to record here soon of why I liked it. But I think my favorite play still continues to be the Michael Block missed the cut bet.
Yeah, I'm with it.
All right, Nick, where can everybody find you?
At StixPicks, STIXPICKS, and the Action Network Best Bets podcast and article. But yeah, I'm not having high expectations this week. I'm with you on the outright market. I think it's likely going to be someone up top. That's not groundbreaking news or anything like that. But I am excited to get different in DFS and just, you know, enjoy it.
And you can find me on Twitter at TeeOffSports. As always, if you have any questions about this week from either a DFS or betting perspective, reach out to either me on TeeOffSports, Nick at StixPicks. And once again, we want to thank everyone who makes us a part of their weekly research process. We will see you guys back here again next week.